Hello and welcome to this edition of Women's Soccer Zone, a special episode for you on this occasion, recorded a couple of weeks ago after a charity football match between Tottenham Hotspur ladies of the FAWSL 2 and an ex-England All-Star 11 that featured the likes of Kelly Smith, Rachel Brown-Finnis and Lindsay Johnson. After the charity match, myself and editor of She Kicks magazine, Jen O'Neill, were able to have a chat with some of the players and individuals involved in that charity match. Myself and Jen chatted to the likes of Rachel Brown and Pauline Cope, who was a goalkeeper with the England team in the 1990s. But Jen was able to have a sit down with four individuals that featured as part of that match up on stage after I'd conducted my interviews on stage alongside her. Jen was joined by Claire Taylor, who played for England in the 1990s. She was the first sportswoman to represent England both at football and in cricket as well in a World Cup, played in the 1995 World Cup for England in football and represented the England cricket team at a World Cup as well. She was also joined by Siân Williams, and we'll hear from her first. Siân played for both England and for Wales, interestingly, before going on to manage the Welsh national team. She was also joined by former England assistant coach Marianne Spacey, well known for her time with Arsenal ladies and with England, winning over 90 caps for her country. And she was also joined by former record goal scorer Karen Walker, who until Kelly Smith broke her record, was a formidable force for England, scoring plenty of goals and a legend for Doncaster Rovers Bell. So really interesting insight from a special event that was held. So as I said, you'll hear from Jen, who will be speaking to Siân Williams first, and then you'll hear from Claire Taylor, Karen Walker and Marianne Spacey. So sit back, relax and enjoy.
I don't know if people know who these players are. Have you seen them play a football? It's been
in
so
black
long.
Yeah.
In black and white. So Charlotte's got to get off, so we're going to pick on her first. And there's been some news this week that Katie Zellum from Liverpool is going to Italy. Well, you played in Italy at a club pretty much close to Juventus. What was that like?
Yeah, it's a great experience because obviously over here at the time there wasn't even a national league, let alone Super League.
So what years were
they? I went over in 86 to 88. So we were still playing in the Southern Region League. So we played against each other when we were younger. So you went over there and they had national league. There were 16 teams that were effectively full time. So it was a massive step up in quality.
And did you get paid?
Yeah, we were contracted players, not professional players. Mm. So we got paid and we lived in apartments all together. But yeah, I'm not sure whether that was officially paid or, but we were officially contracted was the term.
And was it enough to just get by living?
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't settle down. You couldn't, you know, make a profession out. It was a great experience. But then I came back to go to university because it wasn't a long-term plan.
Did you? I'm sure you said years ago that they taught you how to dive. Did you practice diving in training?
They used to try and it was something they encouraged. They think you're daft if you don't. I could never get the hang of it. But they think.
Are you laughing that laugh? Yeah,
they think it's part of the game. Yeah, Magsy did a great one today. But they think it's part of the game, and they think countries that don't do it are daft. They laugh at us for not doing it, but they just grow up with it. And you know, if anyone comes anywhere near you, it's another way of getting an advantage.
Mm. Yeah. Who decided that you would play at the back today? Because you played sort of full back for a bit.
Yeah, well, they kept playing that whip it on the right wing, and Bessa and Michelle, I think, was starting to struggle. So I said, "Oh, we'll swap for a bit and have a rest." And that was last I saw of it.
So what you could play at wide, but you would play through the middle. Tricky, sort of skillful player. What was your preference?
I preferred playing central midfield. Yeah, that was my favourite.
Being on the ball.
Yeah. Yeah. That was, I just liked having the ball. Not always necessarily should have, but I'd always call for it anyway.
14 years you were at Arsenal? Yeah, about that. Was there a secret to your longevity there and all of the trophies that you won in that time?
I think we were lucky. We had a turnover even as players retired. We had some great youngsters coming through. I was fairly young when I joined, and I always worked hard on my fitness, so I kept going perhaps a bit longer than some people. But no, I think it was just a case of we kept trying to push the standards, and as players that played at Arsenal, say, and running up and down those Highbury steps and around that pitch doing horseshoes. I mean, they're like nightmares that you still have.
You're laughing because you know. But all four of you went to the 95 World Cup. You didn't get to play though. How old were you at the time?
I don't know, I wasn't young. Yeah. It was more okay. I'd switched across from Wales and that had taken a long time to go through. But I just don't think I was Take Copeland sort of player. He played a different style of football, and it, you know, I didn't really fit in with the style that he wanted to play. So it's a bit frustrating, but I suppose that's football.
Did you enjoy the experience, or was it too frustrating to enjoy?
Yes and no. I mean, as players have said, you know, the team came together, and there was nothing to do except for entertain each other, really. Because, like you say, there was none of the technology. So it was fun in that respect, but yeah, I think it was frustrating, and by the end, a lot of us were ready. Well, I speak for myself. A lot of us were ready to come home, I think. I was ready to come home. I was a bit frustrated, yeah.
What would have happened if you'd won that quarterfinal and then got...
I would have fainted at the start, because Germany were good, but... I mean, even when we were 3-0 down, he put a defender on. Yeah, so it was like...
Well, we might get onto this, because I don't think there's a huge amount of love along this... Well, maybe in the...
No.
Joe Broadhurst gone home, I'm sure she wasn't Ted's biggest fan either. But you mentioned that you played for Wales and then for England. Were you a record at that time or not? In world football, were you one of the few people to do that?
I think that's why they changed the rule. I had played for Wales when I was about 17, because that was actually my preference. My family's all Welsh. But when I went away to Italy, I was told if I went to Italy, I would never play for Wales again. And my team had said that I could fly back. They'd fly me back if necessary. They didn't play one competitive game in the time that I was out there, but they wouldn't pick me. So then Vic, you know, worked hard in Venice and the FA and in the end UEFA to get me permission, because I played a friendly match, I was under 18, and that's why they've now got the new rule that you have to play a senior match, competitive match, before you're actually obliged to play for the teams.
So might you be a question on pointless or something in the future?
I think I've been questioned on something. Yeah.
That's stardom, that is, when I get on the pitch.
Yeah.
And then you went to manage Wales.
Yeah. That was a strange one. Yeah, they approached me, and it was weird because I was still playing for England and playing for Arsenal, so I was still actually a player. And they said, well, you know that, you know, I'm doing all these other things. Oh, yeah, we can fit it round. But it was very much a part-time role. I mean, we used to meet up about 2 days before a game. You were lucky if you could fit in two training sessions. Yeah, so it was a great experience, you know, as a young person. had to have that coaching experience, and you know, it was fantastic. But it was there wasn't a lot of support. We had no sports science. We had no goalkeeper coach. Even when I got an A-licensed goalkeeper coach to say, well, come and do it for nothing, they said no. Yeah, so it was a very frustrating experience, but, you know, I learned a lot from it. Yeah.
The whole Ireland women's national team strike went on strike recently, and it's kind of Emma Byrne's drop the mic moment to make the Irish FA or the FAI do something about their treatment. Did you kind of, because you weren't happy when Wales pulled their women's team out of qualifying for the Euros, were you? Was that one of your drop the mic moments? Do you think it helped?
It was difficult because you had a lot of players, and basically we were due to play in the European Championships. For financial reasons, they decided to pull the women's team out. We had inside information as to what, I don't know whether I'm allowed to say, so probably best not. But their reasons were very, very wrong. There were a lot of players that were starting to go to the media and, you know, complain and make... So I said to them, best thing is that I say something, because it's not a great loss for me. For you, it's your career and your playing career. You should never give up. In fairness, the captain at the time as well did come out and speak out to the media. It was a wrong decision. What they did was wrong. They, at the time, I don't think they took women's football as seriously. Now, you know, since they had Yarmo and then now Jane, they've actually got full-time staff and, you know, are taking it a lot more seriously, luckily.
And what do you still coach? What are you teaching? Or
I teach full-time, yeah, so not enough time. That's why I stopped doing Watford. I just did not have the time for it. And then I just do the county schools teams, so just help with that, and that's fun. But it's a lot less of a time commitment than obviously the Super League and things like that.
They're very lucky kids to have somebody with your experience and ability to coach them. Did they realise what you did as a player, particularly?
I don't know. I don't really talk about it.
Do you
it,
not get the so ball no. and skin them all?
Occasionally they see me doing keep-ups and they think, oh, actually, you can play. But it's not something I announce. So, yeah.
Do you have any great memories from your career? Is it all on-field things? Because when I speak to these three, there'll be off-field things they'll remember.
Yeah, but they were naughty.
Well, I was going to say the naughty kids were last.
That was a naughty group.
You were always very well behaved.
Yeah, I think I was probably a bit boring. Yeah.
Did Vic Akers get the best out of you then, as a player?
I think so. I like Vic. He gave us a lot of freedom to play and express ourselves. We communicated well. So I like the fact that if we had something to say, or if I had something to say, he would listen. And, you know, senior players would have an input in terms of during match play. I'm not nothing to do with team selection or anything like that, but during match play you would say, oh, this doesn't feel right, or this is difficult, and he would listen to what we said. That's how I felt anyway.
Do you watch the women's game now? Do you
not
get
so
the
much, yeah, when I can, but we, you know, to be honest, even the Euros, only saw the first couple of England games because we were away on holiday then. But we try to make to a couple of games each season if we can.
But yeah. You were cheering Wales men's team at the Euros the other year.
Oh, yeah. Wales first, England second. Sorry.
Maybe we'll have to get rid of you after that kind of comment. Did you train specifically for today? Have you been putting some extra work in?
No, I haven't done as much this year as previous years, actually. But I generally do keep fit anyway. So, it was difficult. It was hard work out there today.
It's hot.
When Kofi asked how long's gone, and they said 17 minutes, I must admit, I did want to cry at that point.
Wow. Yeah. Has anybody got any questions for Sean? She's very quiet and modest, but she's a fantastic player. Yes?
Yeah, the Italian men's game is well known for prearranged results or a gentleman's agreement where if one team has something to play for and the other doesn't, they let them win. But to your knowledge, did that happen in the female game in Italy?
Not to my knowledge. I'm not sure. There were shenanigans that went on, as is sort of expected. There were things like if people were getting close to their five yellow cards, all of a sudden, I got three yellow cards, I never got booked in my 2 years over there. So if they needed, if Marianne was, say, on four yellow cards, hers would suddenly go under my name. So little things like that. And there's a lot of political stuff involved in their football. So we were a Juventus club, so when you came up against certain other clubs, I think that, because that means something politically. I don't know. They've got about 300 political parties, so I don't know the ins and outs. But if you came up against other clubs, there was a lot of friction and things like that. But apart from that, I don't think it was, because the betting and things, that wasn't involved. So I don't think there was, as far as I know.
Okay. Yeah, John, Tom?
Was Rose Riley out there when you were out there?
Yeah. Yeah.
And she changed the Italian. Did you not think about... Oh, I could get a game for it though.
As well as England
and Wales. This is not what we think. I mean, you thought, well, Wales said you wouldn't play again. You thought, yeah. I'll play for Italy.
Not at the time. I mean, they were very good. At the time, Italy were probably the strongest, certainly right up there. But I was only 18 when I went out there, so it wasn't, you know,
but
something.
Rose wasn't my daughter, didn't you, then?
When she first went, Rose had just finished playing. She sort of came on as a sub, I think, in one of the seasons. But she was pretty much at the end of her career then. She was at Tranny, which is one of the top teams. But yeah, I mean, she, all the Italian players used to speak very, very highly of her.
Well, thank you very much for hanging around, Sean, and it was lovely to speak to you.
These two.
Thank you for hanging around and being well behaved.
Thank you.
So, as you can see, we're left with the naughty kids.
Harsh but fair.
Harsh but fair, says Claire. Which rhymes. So Sean went away to play in Italy. You ended up having to go away, Claire, to work in New Zealand. Was that because there was nothing for you in England?
Oh no, I'd finished playing football by then. Yeah. For people that don't know, I had a sort of like a dual career playing cricket for England as well as football. And that got to a stage where it was just getting a little bit too hectic. So now I got offered a job out in New Zealand and I lived there for 7 years, which is very nice. Got a house over there still, so rent it out at mate's rate, if anybody's interested.
Was it on Airbnb or
no? No, he's actually rented out, but right at the bottom of South Island, so if anyone wants to visit, then more than welcome.
So you played at a World Cup for England, you won the World Cup with England at cricket, and played at Lords. And I read in an interview that you did about 10 years ago, and somebody asked you if you ever thought Lords would be full for an England women's cricket match, and you said never, because the ECB won't make enough money out of it, and that's happened recently.
Yeah, but the ECB weren't in charge of it, yeah. The ICC were in charge of it, so that's why it made money.
Were you proud of that?
Yeah, it was really good, and going on from what Kopi says, the England cricket are a little bit better at recognising their former players, so the 93 team and the 76 team, we had a box up on the high side on the mound stand, and looked after us like nobody's business. We had Judy Murray in our little box as well, so I had a good chat with Judy about the state of British tennis as well. So, but no, I think, you know, we're not blowing our own trumpets, but I think in all sports we're part of the history, like it or lump it, good history, bad history, whatever, it's still history. And I'm not saying, you know, we want a fanfare every time we turn up somewhere, but a little recognition of sort of like to say that we've led the way a little bit would be quite nice.
In an amazing dual career, but you said in an interview as well that you prefer football to play.
It's been a lot, actually. Yeah, definitely. Cricket is a crazy game.
That's where the research ends, by the way.
Yeah. It's one of those, you know, if you're out first ball, you're out first ball. If you drop a catch, game over. Whereas in football, you know, you give a penalty away or you handle the ball, you've got another 70, 80 minutes to try and put it right. So I felt more in control, probably you did see that today out there, but I felt more in control of football and cricket.
We mentioned Italy. You went to play your debut against Italy, was it? Or you went to Italy and won the Mundialito twice, so 84, 88. Mm-hmm. Can you explain to people what the Mundialito was?
So before the FIFA took on the World Cup, they played the Little World Cup, which was the Mundialito. And there was us, Italy, Belgium, and
Germany, America
played in it. Yeah, and the 2 years we beat them. Yeah, fantastic. We beat Italy in the final with Italian officials the first year, which was amazing. And then we beat Italy in the second, when we won it again in the after extra time, and Linda Curl scored 2 goals. So it was amazing. And it was just, you think back now and you go, that was such a, it was such an honour to be there, but you just see where the game has grown and where the game is now, but you wouldn't change any of those things that we've been part of.
And how organised was it? Was it sort of turn up and Linda or Pat gives you your kit?
it was what it was. The resources that the women's game had, and it was just purely, you know, pretty much volunteers that were running the game for us, with Linda obviously being in charge at the time. But it was just everybody that got involved with it enjoyed their time there and just had, you know, just the players, the staff. You know, I remember we played, I think it was in, we played the Republic of Ireland, and then we were flying out to Italy after, like two or three days after. And my mum washed the kit, she washed the England kit, hung it on the line in the house in Ireland, and all the villagers were coming in taking pictures of the England kit hanging up in the back garden. Brought it back to England, put it on the plane, and then it was off to Italy. So it was very different, but it was, the passion and the fact that we wanted to be the best that we could be was still exactly the same.
Did you know that there was an England team? When did you find out there was an England team?
I think England played Sweden at Plough Lane. I'm going to say it was about 78, 79 maybe. And my dad took me because he said, like, come, we'll go and watch this game. And that once I knew there was an England team, then that was it for me. I just wanted to play for England and try and get involved with the club from there.
Did he not get a photograph of you there watching?
I don't think that camera's back.
Did he not paint a picture of you?
Yeah. little sketch.
Not like a court draw or something like that. Yeah. We had a fantastic England career, and then you took a break and had your daughter. And did you think that was it with England?
Yeah, I think I was fortunate that I played in the World Cup in '95, and then fell pregnant pretty much a couple of months after that. When I had my daughter, I think I just relaxed about the whole game and just took the pressure off myself as much as anything. And just, you know, I love playing the game, but I think before I had my daughter, I was quite intense and just wanted to play as much as I could and be as the best I could. But then I relaxed a little bit and I just loved playing back at Arsenal, and then I got the call up to be back with the England squad, and it was like, oh my god, I had 76 caps at the time and I was like the new kid on the block. So it was amazing, it was brilliant, and again it was just, you know, still some of the players that I'd been around before were still in the squad, so it just felt like coming home in some ways, because you just, you know, it was such a good family field, a good feeling of people around you that wanted you to do well, so it just felt like you was going home again.
Mm. Have you scored at Wembley, is that right? In 1990, I think,
yeah.
I saw somewhere.
Yeah.
So was it that big to you when you played there in 1990?
It was just, we played Scotland, yeah. And we played the Republic of Ireland as well, and we played there about 4 or 5 times. And you just
sort of written out of the history a little bit, isn't it? We get excited about England playing Germany there and the first time. I guess it's new Wembley. But things like that, it's sort of been pushed to one side a little.
And it is frustrating because, you know, you think of all the things that we're making history, and you kind of go, well, no, that's happened before and that's happened before. Mm. But the important thing is that whatever they say is making history, we've got our memories, and that can never be eradicated. Yeah, yes, for now. Yeah. Is it? Yeah. Oh, you time I it now.
You scored on your debut for England.
Yeah, it was in the Mundo tournament. Yeah, the manager had said to me, I was only 17 at the time. I'd only been playing football for a year and ended up in the England squad somehow, wherever. And he said he was just taking me just for the experience, and then I think one of the centre forwards, Jane Stanley, fainted because it was that hot. And he just shook me on, and I thought, oh God. And he just come to me and I just hit him with my left foot, and he just went in the top corner. I thought, it's easy.
Did he celebrate?
Well, everybody just jumped on me because it was just mental. I'd literally just walked on and I didn't know where I was. The ball just came and I just hit it and it just went in.
And he went on and scored another 39 or possibly more, because we're not quite sure, goals. Was it always easy?
No, it was really difficult. It was difficult. I think at the time when we played through the years, we were always catching up with the other countries, and like at the moment we're competing, which is great to see, but when we played, the teams were generally in front of us, so to get a goal was even harder then. So that it was really difficult. And just because it was difficult, it just meant the world. Every time you scored, if you, I know these guys have scored for England, you can't explain. It's hard to explain. It's the best thing.
You played for Bells for 2 decades, pretty much. Was it true that it was your neighbour that told you about the team to go and play?
I didn't even know women played football. I played at school. They wouldn't even let me play in the school team. So I didn't know anything. I'd never played, I'd never been coached, I never played a competitive 11-a-side game in my life. And then my next door neighbour, she played for Doncaster Bells, came and told me, and I turned up thinking, and there was 6, 7 England internationals there, and I'd never even played. It was either sink or swim. And then I think, which obviously don't happen in the men's game, the centre forward got pregnant. And they shoved me in, and just, I'm very, very lucky that I could have gone anywhere. And to go and be part of Doncaster Bells, which for me, is the best time of my life to be involved in a team who were superb. And I loved. I wouldn't swap one second of it. I see the girls on TV, superb. Good luck to them. I'm not even envious. I'm not bothered because I wouldn't swap one second. Because when I played for Doncaster Bells, it was just amazing from the first second to the last. Mm. Every single bit of it. And we got to achieve. I think we played in 12, 13 FA Cup finals, and I played for England, travelled the world. I wouldn't swap one single second of it.
So she absolutely loved playing for the Bells, but you decided not to sign for the Bells, Claire. And yeah. you played in a similar number of cup finals, but you had less success, perhaps. Or three cup finals in a row.
Lost all three. Yeah, I had to take a week off work.
You signed for Knowsley, that became Liverpool.
Yeah, where I lived, I was in Huddersfield, so it was either Doncaster Bells an hour that way or Knowsley, Liverpool, as they were that way. And I was pretty good mates with Cad, sort of like, you know, we're roomies at England, and she go, oh, come and join, be a bell, because one thing you need to know about Karen and the Bells is they were a life, family. Come and join us, and I said, yeah, but I won't have to mark you then, will I? You know, I'll be on your team, a bit like what Rach was saying, you know, when you're a goalkeeper, if you're in a, not that Liverpool are a crap team, but if you're in a bad team, and you're a defender, you've got more to do. So I did make the decision to go the hour the other way, and it was a good decision. Came across Liz Deegan, who was very good coach at the time, and then Knowsley were taken on by Liverpool, so got a chance to play at Anfield and use Melwood training facility and things like that. Came across Sylvia Gore, which is absolutely brilliant as well. And yeah, I was glad I did it. It was harder, it was a lot harder. But again, you know, you choose a team, you stick with them, you're loyal. Like I'm saying, it's not about the money. You know, yeah. They give me a tenner to travel to Liverpool three times a week, which obviously doesn't balance the books. But you did it because you wanted to do it. You love doing it.
How did you fit that with cricket training then?
I was lucky because at the time it was like winter and summer. Mm. So I'd usually finish the football season and then went into the cricket season. But then, like I say, it all got a bit too much.
So Kaz, her neighbour, told her, and I read that you saw an advert in Shoot or something?
Shoot
for
magazine.
Bronte.
For all those that are old enough to remember Shoot magazine. Yeah, they wanted team Bronte ladies based over Howarth Way, Bradford Way. And three of us from school who kicked a ball around, a bit like Kaz at school as well, just said, right. So we answered the advert and ended up playing for Bronte ladies.
I played against Bronte ladies after you'd gone, when they got relegated. And to give you an idea of what Bronte were like, they played near a canal and in the middle of nowhere, and there was like a shed, wasn't there? Yeah. You got changed in. Yeah. And when we got home, one of my teammates found a mouse in a kit bag.
that one.
A refugee that sort of run away from. Bronte were great fun, and Huddersfield as well. How did you end up sort of stopping playing football then? What was the...
Probably age, more than anything. At least with cricket.
We've seen you today.
Yeah, I know.
90 minutes.
But with cricket, you can keep going a little bit longer. And I think the England setup, cricket-wise, at the time, were getting, you know, sports science was coming in and physios and things like that. So, you know, my career could have went on longer in cricket. And it was a case of you going on winter tours as well, so that ate into the football season. So it was a case of make a decision. And I thought, I'm going to do more at cricket than I am at football, because Mr. Copeland had wielded his axe as well. So, you know, and the writing's on the wall, so I just made the decision and went.
Do you get on with Ted?
I haven't seen Ted for years and years and years, but I think I missed a lot of his England tenure because I played like in 95 for him at the World Cup, and then when I came back in, Hope selected me, so I didn't have the kind of experiences probably that others had.
So I'm now looking at you, because you didn't really get on with him very well, did you? So can you explain to people?
Difficult. I don't even know where it was. I was playing for England at the time. I was playing for Doncaster Bells. We were really, really good team. I think I was the leading goal scorer in the league by the closest to me was about 40 goals difference. So I was playing really well. I was playing probably at the top of my game, and just dropped me. And he sent me a letter. I wish I'd have kept it. And it was a letter, and there was a list of things I can do and the things I can't do. And that was it, and that's all I got. And I was left out for 2 years. And it was really frustrating. And I'm not sure what I'd do if I saw him now.
I did actually. Did it upset you that much?
It did, yeah. Because it's a big part. I loved playing football for England. I absolutely loved it. And to be given the opportunity and then it taken away for no reason at all, other than, I think, his man management style wasn't very good, and he was a bit of a bully. And I'm the kind of person, if he shouted at Claire, I'd stick up for Claire and probably get myself into trouble. And I think if I can't think of any specific time, but I'm sure it was something like that. I'd said something. He just didn't like it. It was a bit teacher pupil kind of thing, right out, and it was frustrating. But I still played for Donnybells. I still kept scoring. I still kept going, just hoping that they would realise that he was a complete idiot and they would get rid of him. And I think he got England had a game away in, I think it was at Preston somewhere, and the squad had already met up, and he got sacked on the Wednesday. For what reason eventually, and whoever came in as a caretaker, I can't remember his name. Is it Barry? I can't remember his name. Some guy came in as an interim, and he brought me an extra. He just rang me and said, "Come down," and I played, and I continued to play. Thankfully,
is it? How do you cope with managers and players not getting on? Maybe when you're involved in that kind of coaching environment without getting yourself into trouble. What's the? Is it just inevitable as personalities?
It is, but I think ultimately if everybody's there for the same reason, it's to be the best they can, it's to win games, it's to ensure that everybody has got the same focus. So whether there's, you know, poor relationships or whether there's fantastic relationships, ultimately you're there for a reason, and you know, you bring people in and around your squad, or bring people in that you think that you might not get on with them, but you know that they're going to do the job that you're asking.
Yeah. You can do it. I didn't particularly have the best relationship in the world with Hope Powell, as a lot of players have mentioned, but at the end of the day, she turned right. I mean, I could walk down the corridor, she would put her head down and not speak to me, and I was an England player, but in the end, she made me captain. So you've got to keep going. I had the same goal. I wanted to do well for England, and in the end, she made me captain. So you've got to hold your hands up and thank her for that. The best thing that's ever happened in my life, really. But even then, even after that, I didn't particularly have the best relationship with her. But you can. Not everybody's going to get on. We're all groups of women in a way.
It's all got a bit deep there, didn't it? Yeah. Sorry, we've got some kind of lifted up a little bit. Yeah. What kind of funny stories can you share or scrapes from...
Sean was right, yeah. Those would be off the field, I think.
a lot of
I
good
remember,
memories.
You know, when we, I don't know if there are any officials in the game, but when we used to go away, we used to get like a bit of an entourage of football officials coming with us, like old men who were about 120.
On the committee.
And they used to just come along and you'd think, oh, the hell's this? But they used to get the kit as well. So you would get up and go to the game, and they'd all have the same kit on as the players, and I remember going one time and I roomed with Sammy Britton, so the best times in my life. And I got up and I said, "Sam, look at the size of this tracksuit." It was like hanging off me, and I thought, "Where the hell, why have I got this?" So I just, you didn't really get to pick your size, you just grabbed whatever was in the thing. Then I realised who's actually tracksuit I'd got, because the guy come on the bus like that, he was about 80, and he was just like, he could have what? Me and Sat, we just knew straight away from, just in absolute hysterics. But that's how it used to be, even that you didn't have your own kit, you just grabbed it. You know, if you couldn't get a large, if you wanted a large, you just had to be first in the change.
Did you say that you went to one of the press things, maybe at the World Cup, in your pyjamas or something?
Oh, you have a lot of downtime, don't you? Don't get me wrong, I think now it's obviously a lot more serious and a lot more professional to speak, but I was just in my room and I got a call to go and speak to the media, and I was ready for bed. I was all right.
It's fair enough, isn't
it? You can't see what you're wearing when you do an interview, can they?
Well, you can these days,
that's a
problem,
isn't it? Well, they can now, but they couldn't then, they didn't have cameras then. I said I'd probably got you.
Some programme collector sent me a programme that had some photographs in that I think were yours,
Claire.
Oh, yeah,
you sent them on to me, didn't you?
About like 97, 98. And there's pictures of cricket and the end of smart blazer and skirt and stuff. And then there's, I think you were on a away trip in Spain, England. And there's a picture of Kaz with tampons stuck up her nose. I was sat on the bed.
That's enforced.
I hope you don't want to tell this one. I was sharing a room with Kaz. And she goes, "I've just got this nasty feeling that my period's going to start." And I goes, "Well, you know, if it is, you've got all your stuff, haven't you?" "Yeah, yeah, I'm fine." I goes in the toilet, come back out, and she's just sat on bed like that. She's got a Tampax like this. She's got one in each ear, one coming down each side. So she said, "I'm ready, just in case." brilliant. And shocking as well.
You played for Vic for a long time. Was he probably your favourite manager, or?
Yeah, I think.
Or Fred? Was it Fred?
Yeah, I think they were both very different, but they both allowed players to be expressive, as Sian was saying. And you know, I think with the squad at Arsenal, we had such a good group of players that anyone that came in and told players what to do would have, you know, it just wouldn't have worked. But I think Vic knew his players well enough to say, look, just we'll set you up this way and just go and play. And I think that was, we had some really, really successful days at Arsenal. And again, you talk about the England times and being part of the family and being part of a group. But that was just as good. And I'm sure they said about Doncaster and about Liverpool, that real kind of, everyone was just playing for the absolute love of it. And, you know, just supporting each other, helping each other out. But, you know, our days at Arsenal, I thoroughly enjoyed them. And Vic was a massive part of that.
Did you ever score a scruffy goal in your life, or were they all belters that you could put in a video reel?
Oh, probably.
Did anyone come up your arse in the 6-yard box? Or
yeah,
no?
About 30.
Loads of you.
Yeah. No, I don't think I ever get anywhere near the 6-yard box.
You'd already had a shot by then.
Got bored, yeah.
How many goals did you score in your career, do you know?
For Liverpool, none. For Millwall, one. Screamer from the edge of the area. Heading. Yeah, yeah. England, 3.
Wow.
One with my left foot, even, from 2 yards.
Collector's item.
Very much a collector's item.
Is it unfair to think that probably about 50% of yours were headers? Fantastic in the air. Does that come naturally? Did you work on it?
No, not at all. I used, before I played football, I used to play basketball. It's a little bit about timing. It doesn't really matter how tall you are. So it's timing, really, and it was just something that came quite natural. But I'd like to think I scored a few with my feet as well over the years.
Both feet?
But people remember, because I think when we... To be really good in the hair, it stands out in the women's game a bit more than it does in the men's game. And I was always half decent in the air, so it did stand out. But I did score quite a few with feet.
We haven't had a centre forward like Kaz in the English game since you
retired. It's a different game, isn't it? I was the old fashioned centre forward. I knew what my limitations were. I knew that I couldn't get a ball and take 10 people on, but I knew where to go to score a goal, and you just got to understand your own limitations, and I did, and thankfully.
But that's what I was going to get you to do, if you didn't mind. I was going to get you to describe Kaz as a player, if people haven't seen her in her heyday. And you've kind of started that by saying that England haven't replaced her since then.
She said herself, like, as an old-fashioned centre-forward. But I think there was more to your game than that, because it wasn't just on the pitch in terms of the technical ability. It was on the pitch in that drive and getting people around her to, you know, play at their max. And there's a real go-getter, and saying, you know, she would set the standard for how she would play, but people would follow that standard. And I just knew if you whip one in the box, she'd get on the end of it. And you know, a couple of years ago, it was at Stratford, wasn't it? And we played in this game a couple of years ago, and it was like a corner, and Kaz got on the end of it, and you just go, that's what Kaz brings amongst so many other things as well.
And she's so sensible and serious off the field
absolutely.
I'm a policewoman, I'm very serious.
and Kaz, can you describe Claire as a player then?
Mental. She was the greatest roommate. It was like just going away for 2-3 weeks with one of your family. You'd meet her, and it were easy, but just tough. Even today, how long is it since you've played really properly?
This time last year.
But I mean, in a professional week in, week, it's years and years.
Yeah, like 10 years.
She's just very, very reliable, very hard to play against. I've had some battles. In the air, Claire was very good in the air herself. But all round,
thing with Kaz was, once she was saying she couldn't dribble, I remember playing one game, and I got so close, I'm going, Kaz, I'm behind you. And she started laughing and just lost the ball completely. So if you want to get the ball off, just get right close down and go, Kaz, I'm behind you. She's giving you no problems.
I wish you'd told me that 15 years ago. Fill in now.
Easily distracted.
And would you like to describe Marianne? I know you're
amazing.
Friends as well.
Oh, we're said in the changing room, like you said, I don't think Max scored a scruffy goal. You always knew you weren't going to give her the ball, either out wide or in the middle from about 30 yards, because she just let fly and 9 times out of 10 it go in. Heading, I can't say we've seen too many headers from Max, but again, like Kaz says, she knew her limitations, didn't she? She was all right. Definitely. Never put the ball in the box, it was just Max in there, because we're going to have kind of thing. But no, very skillful. I think Barry Williams was a bit harsh when he said she was the laziest player he'd ever seen on a football field. But we stood up for you then, didn't we? No, actually, Max went, I think you're right.
Well, I spoke to Lou Waller about 6 months ago, and she said that you were lazy as well, so that's two people, that's almost a quorum.
But she... I remember the FA Cup final, we were 2-0 up, it got back to 2-2, it's like 5 minutes to go. She got the ball on the halfway line, did one of her amazing runs, top corner, 3-2, we lose an FA Cup final. And that's what Max would do. You might say it's lazy, but I think she preferred to say she'd just lie dormant for a while and then just spring into action.
She could win a game on her own.
Yeah, definitely.
And there aren't many players now, and I think the England team at the moment are doing superbly well. They're all very samey. They haven't got characters like Marianne anymore who would just get the ball, get all the scruff of the net and just pie it in the top corner. But we don't have players like that. And I think we were talking in the change room saying, I'd love to see some of the players that I played with. A lot of the players, some of them have already gone, how good they would be now. Because technically, some of the players I played with were superb and were, like you say, could win games on their own. I don't see... many players like that at the elite level, and I think when teams do have that player, they tend to win the tournament, because I think the best teams in any league, men, women, if you've got a player who stands out, they will be up there winning stuff. And Marianne, we had battles with Arsenal and the other teams that Max played for, and we knew that we would have to score, we'd have to do something, because you give her the ball, she would win the game on her own. And I don't think there are players like that around anymore.
Do you mind being called Max?
I didn't like it when I was playing, but it was just easier than shouting, Marianne, give me the ball. So it's
your football name.
It's my football name.
You can cope with it.
Okay.
Has anybody got any questions for these amazing players? Hooray, Jess!
I've got one for each of you, if I may.
All right. Okay.
So, do you want
to? I'm happy to. Rachel Hay O'Flynn was a cricket legend and a big supporter of women's football. Did you know her personally? Did you have much of a rep ball with her?
When I first started playing, I came across her, and she was a larger-than-life character, a lovely person. And again, she got women's cricket on the map. You know, we had a women's World Cup in cricket before the men. She was like instrumental in getting the first one in 73. Going to Jack Hayward and saying, I need £3,000 to put a tournament on. He gave her the money, and like to say, the rest is history. And this is why I keep going back to the history, you know, like, was a great win down at Lord's for the women, but if she hadn't have set that, you know, those wheels in motion with the skirts and everything else, then none of that had happened. It was really nice. We were in the box with her son, and there was, you know, a good... It's a good tribute to her going on at the time, and you know, it's like you say, you mentioned women's cricket and everyone knows Rachel Hay O'Flynn, and long may that continue.
Marianne, you played many years for Friends of Fulham / Wimbledon, so are you still in touch with anyone at AFC Wimbledon Ladies today, or do you go down there ever?
My two best mates, I've been playing alongside since I was little Lou, since we were 11, and we were playing five-a-side football at Willows High School. And Julie Mack, who came to Friends of Fulham at 17 when I was at that age. They've been my lifelong friends, and that's the beauty of the women's game. And, you know, back then, the friendships you make, and they still remain the same, like, as the years go on. So they've been my best mates for years and years and years. And still in contact with, like, a lot of the girls that play there or have played there in the past. And, you know, again, it's just that once you build and spend so much time together in your career as players, you know, you just don't forget them as people.
And Karen, did you ever score a perfect hat trick, left foot, right foot and header?
Yes.
I think it was in the FA Cup final at Tranmere.
I was there, 92. For I was there.
Yeah, because
he was cheering Tranmere.
Yeah. And I think that was when there was a lot of pressure on me to score a hat-trick, because I'd scored a hat-trick in every round. And I don't think it's ever been done, or will ever be done, possibly. So there was a lot of pressure for me to do it, and yeah. Yeah, I remember it well.
Yeah, and that was the first time ever I saw you play, and I remember did a little write-up for it for some fanzine or other, and I wrote you were a predatory striker in the Lunar Command.
Oh, thank you.
Predatory. Well, there was a video fit centre forward, was what stuck with me. Is that it? Mark Bright.
Yeah, he was
a
nice guy.
Yes.
I'm gone, fire away. Yeah. We're all friends.
I know you probably realise I'm a Scotsman, and we've had some great Scottish players, women. Julie Fleeton come up. I mean, did any of you play with Julie?
I played against her.
Yeah.
I played against her, fantastic.
Who was at the Bells? The Scots girl.
Pauline Hamill.
Yeah.
Pauline Hamill.
I didn't play. I played against Julie quite a lot. Right. I used to think she was very similar to an out and out goal scorer, strong. Fantastic player. Yeah, very good player.
Fleet was in the same team at Arsenal.
Sorry? Was she?
Yeah, fantastic player. Very good player.
Do you think that Kim Little would have made a difference to that Scotland team?
Yeah, absolutely. Fantastic player.
If we'd had a full side, it would be.
Any team's going to miss a player of that calibre, aren't they? Any team. And just unfortunate that she weren't playing.
And I think that's one of the things about the women's game. There was genuine frustration that Kim Little wasn't at that tournament, mm-hmm. because she is such a good player, and she's worked so hard to and Scotland qualify, and for someone like Kim and the ability that she's got to miss that tournament was, you know, everyone felt for her.
She dragged them through, you know, some of her roles and that.
You want to see players like that at that level, don't you?
Be there, you know?
It's a shame.
Did you get asked to come up here? Peel stuff, Percy Peeling, shouting from the back.
Did you?
Yeah. So you're now disappearing under the table before I ask him a question. avoided it as well.
I have a question.
Yes.
For Claire, actually.
Oh.
Elise Perry down in Australia was, like yourself, played football and cricket for Australia. I think she was given an ultimatum that she couldn't play for both. She chose cricket. I'm going to assume from what you said that you would have chosen football, but was there ever a situation you were placed in with any pressure from the FA or from the ECB that you needed to choose one or the other?
Yeah, it went the other way around. When I first got in the England football team, there was a England cricket training down at Lillishall, and I said, look, I can't go. I'm playing for England against America, the world champions, and they were travelling around Europe, and we were going to France to play them. And I thought that was a pretty good reason not to go to a training weekend, and they literally took their bat and ball, did the cricket, and so I missed the trip to New Zealand in 91 because of that. And again, it, like you say, life's too short to bear grudges, and you know, spoke about Ted, met with Ted sort of like 2 or 3 years after he told me the door was always open to my England career. And I suggested that he'd either got his foot behind it or the hinges had come off. And we left it at that. And then about four years later, he phones me up and offered me a job. So, you know, I said, oh, is this the same Ted Copeland? Is that door open again now? And he was a bit sheepish. But life is too short to bear grudges. But, possible ultimatums. But I think you've got to do what's right for you at that time in your life. You know, like your life is a series of chapters. And it's like, you know, when one chapter finishes, another one starts. And I think when people give you decisions to make, it's just a decision to make. It shouldn't be an ultimatum.
Marianne, you were in the England squad for a while. Who do you think Mark Sampson should bring up next? / who deserves to be in the England senior squad?
Good question. I think there's some real talent coming through. There's obviously the 19s are out at the moment in Belfast, I was there yesterday. So. But I think, you know, Mark will make his decision on who he wants to bring in. We've got some fantastic, talented players, and I think for me there's a handful that would be like my choice, but it's not my choice, it's Mark's choice, and he will make the selections that he deems appropriate for his squad moving forward.
Also, what do you think Arsenal needs to do to beat the likes of Chelsea and Man City to win the Super League next year?
score more goals than anyone else.
You want to come back? Or?
Get Kopi in goal and get Kaz up front. All right then.
But you know, it's fantastic, isn't it, that we're talking about how many good teams there are playing in the WSL. And
Arsenal dominated for so long now.
Exactly. So now the game is very, very different in that sense that, you know, there's. And I think even there's teams in the WSL now that will take points off of other teams that could be a bit of a shock result. And I just think it makes it so exciting, and it makes the league one that people want to go out and watch. And, you know, you think about the back of the Euros, we just want people to go and watch the games at WSL now and be as passionate about getting the game at WSL as the best league in the world as people that went to watch the Euros and had that experience.
Joe Broadhurst was supposed to stay, but she had to take the kids. So do you want to stitch her up? What's your favourite Joe Broadhurst story?
She was mental.
More mental than me.
No, she was crazy. Crazy. There really is loads of things that I couldn't even bring up here at all.
Without a solicitor.
But she used to just, real clumsy, just fall down the stairs like the morning of the games and just
break a leg.
Just mental, just running around the hotel like a lunatic. And with just too much energy for anyone, you know. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
Really tempted.
I'm going to go that
way. That's fair enough. But anybody else, any other questions? I realise we've kept you here for ages, but it's been lovely to listen to them chat. Oh, well, thank you very much for being a part of it. To three
thank
absolute
you.
Legends.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you. That was much fun.
Women's Soccer Zone. Follow the show on Twitter at WOSO Zone.
So big thanks to Jen O'Neill, Karen Walker, Sean Williams, Claire Taylor and Marianne Spacey. Really interesting insight from a different era of women's football. Hope that you've enjoyed this episode of Women's Soccer Zone. We will look to do more events like this and hopefully we can convert some of them into a podcast. We'll keep you informed on our social media channels at WOSO Zone. Thank you very much for tuning in. Take care of yourselves and bye-bye.